All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
You're listening to the Hockey Podcast Network, your home for hockey talk covering every team in the NHL. New episodes every Monday. Download at thehockeypodcastnetwork.com or wherever you get your podcasts from.
The tournament is finally here. The brackets have been set and the teams are ready to hit the court. And DraftKings, the leader in one-day fantasy, is celebrating with their largest free college basketball survivor pool ever. How large? $1 million in total prizes are up for grabs. And if that's not enough, check this out. When you enter the free DraftKings $1 million survivor pool, you could get a shot at winning $10,000 for every upset. It's easy to play. Just pick one team per day. If they win, you survive and advance to the next round. Last person standing is the winner. Remember, you can only pick one team once for the entire tournament, so choose wisely. DraftKings is a safe, secure, and reliable app. You can deposit and withdraw your funds at your convenience. Get in on all of this week's action by downloading the DraftKings app now. Enter code THPN during sign-up and enter the free $1 million survivor pool. Again, that code is THPN to enter into DraftKings' free $1 million survivor pool. Eligibility restrictions and terms apply. See DraftKings.com for details.
Off the tracks.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back
to the In the Dome podcast.
Okay. All right, you split a two-game set with the Oilers. We're going to break it down. Let's start with the loss.
Well, how can you not start with the loss?
Well, I mean, you're only as good as your last at bat. So, as great as that win felt, I feel just as bad, if not worse, the next game after. So
the loss was worse than the win was good.
That's usually how it is. What it's called. That's why Cherry used to say it's called sudden death overtime, because the pain you feel in the loss never matches the elation you feel in the win, and that's the nature of sports. So maybe what did you see? I have a pretty interesting take on the whole second game as a whole, but what did you see?
I don't know. It kind of just felt like old habits dying hard. Like Sutter was talking about in the Montreal game, how they pretty much played a mistake-free game. Last night was not a mistake-free game. It was pretty much mistakes all game. And the thing that seems to be lingering the most is, yeah, you lost 7-3, but like, why do the Flames have such a proclivity to like let things get so out of hand all the time? Like, this is the third time in the last calendar year you've let the Oilers score 7 goals on you. Like, they just seem to be I don't even think they played that bad. It's just, why are they so prone to just completely falling apart? Like, it's like, just when they're back into it, terrible giveaway goal. Just when they're back into it, terrible penalty goal. And then it just snowballs, and all of a sudden it's 7-1. Like, that's the part where I'm confused. It's like, why does this team have such a propensity to just completely fall apart at times at critical moments in games a lot?
Yeah.
But having said that, again, crappy loss. So many things went wrong. A lot of things didn't, like, we'll get into them. But the thing that is encouraging is there were still some good shifts. There still is some consistencies in how they're playing game to game. It's not like this wild swing. It's not like they're just, you know, coming out and completely shitting the bed. Like, I thought after the first 10 minutes, they settled in nicely, had a pretty good start to the second period, had some zone time. Some of the forechecking stuff was working. So, I mean, game to game over these four games, we have seen some consistent play at the very least.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, and I'll be honest, I honestly thought that with bringing Daryl Sutter in and the type of hockey he rolls out, that we weren't going to see these blowouts anymore. I honestly thought it'd be behind us. So that was a little shocking to me. It's a little concerning, obviously, because it always seems to fall in the middle. I know the big debate, right, about this whole coaching change has been, is it the players or is it the coaching? And obviously it's both, but if it's obvious that the coaching is a major issue, you have to replace Ward, right? I feel like, having slept on it, I'm actually not worried. I was a little shell-shocked last night. Like, it looked like I felt like a lot of the Flames players looked.
Yeah.
But what I have to remind myself is, like, this team has, like you said, old habits, right? Sutter, he's had 1 week to work with this team. Yeah. Okay.
And so we have three wins to show for it.
Exactly. So take it with a grain of salt, right? That loss, like you said, there's some good things. I don't think that, I mean, Markstrom was terrible last night.
Yeah.
He even said it seemed like every chance they got was going in. So I don't necessarily think the score indicated how close the actual matchup was, even though we definitely lost that game pretty handily. But it probably wasn't really a 7-3 win. It's probably maybe like 5-2, right?
No. And again, like, you can't give Connor McDavid that much ice and Drysdale too and expect him not to score. So the opponent, the fact that literally everything went in, the fact that they had 86 power play, well, not even 86, they scored 86 times on the power play, and Markstrom was shaky at the end, add all those things up. And I mean, that's a recipe to give the Oilers 7 goals. But it probably should have been more like 4-1, 5-2 type of night. But that's what I'm saying is, like, I don't understand why these guys, like, it seems to happen a lot. Like, the worst one is the most recent one is that 7-1 loss to the Oilers, or go back to the playoffs when they got absolutely shell-shocked by the Stars, or go back even further to the year before where the Oilers beat them like 8-3 in the Saddle Dome, or there's the big 9-1 loss, remember, against Pittsburgh that everyone credited for turning the season around. It's like, this team seems to have issues just like not letting things spiral out of control a lot. And again, maybe this happens elsewhere and I'll have to look into it, but it sure seems to happen a lot more frequently here.
Yeah. Now, if you're looking at breaking this down, it's like, okay, like we mentioned, Sutter's had a week. You got three actually pretty great wins to show for it, right? Where you actually, we already talked about in the last podcast, you dominated Montreal 5-on-5, one of the best 5-on-5 teams. That first game against the Oilers, wasn't, you executed your game to a T. I'm not sure if maybe one of the biggest differences in game two, you couldn't establish a forecheck, right? They maybe have, like, they had 5 minutes in the game where they got the forecheck going and it was like looking good. I don't know how much of that is Mike Smith was a beast playing the puck last night. As much as I hate to admit it, every single time we dumped it in, he was back there breaking out for the team. So, like, at some point you have to put it in the corners where he can't get it, and you got to work that into your game plan. But the main point I think I want to make is, like, this team hasn't had the nitty-gritty coaching, the in-depth, the get into each individual, pulling all the little things out and, like, ironing out all the kinks within each individual. They haven't had it yet. It's only been a week, right? We believe Daryl is that guy. Even last night, look, it's a work in progress. Daryl said it last night. He literally said straight up, this group is a work in progress. And the tone in which he said it basically meant that there's still a lot of work to do, right? But this whole, where we're at, who knows? Are we going to make the playoffs? I don't know. You cut your deficit. You're in a 6-point hole coming into last week. With the week we had last week, you cut it in half and you maintained it this week. So you have two games against the Leafs. We seem to match up fairly well against them in terms of getting results. I don't know. The Oilers look good, man. And as much as it pains me to say it, they're a good team. And this last game two, right, after game one, because here's where we've been at. The Oilers are beatable. Sure, they're a good team, but they're beatable, right? They got the two best players in hockey. I don't know how that happens. It's like, this is like Lemieux and Jágr.
Oh, don't even. You're going to make me barf.
It's pretty much what it is, man.
Ugh.
I know it's very barf-worthy, but and how ugly is Connor McDavid? This is, maybe we'll touch on that one more time.
Dude, just can he just ourselves. Like Connor, please shave. All you got to do is just trim, dude. Oh my God.
Maybe clean up the diet a bit. It looks like you're, you know, 14 years old with that acne going all over the place.
Get a haircut, cut out the milk and the gluten and shave a bit, dude. Like, geez, you're the face of the league and they can't even show your face.
The thing is, when we're winning and Connor's losing and he's ugly, man, it's satisfying to look at. But when we're losing and he's winning, his ugly face, I just can't even handle it.
His little grin after he makes an unbelievable play is so annoying.
So annoying. But this is what we have to deal with. Our number one rival in the entire league, your divisional rival, your provincial rival, has the best player in the world. He has the best player since Wayne Gretzky. When do we get a Gretzky?
I know. Right? It's not fair.
You just have to luck out and get 16 first overall draft picks in 5 years. Is that how it's done? Like, the fuck. Anyways, it's going to be really interesting to see if they can salvage the season. I'm just, man, after those, that win against Oilers, it's so hard not to just like, just be so bought in and, yeah, and get just like so emotionally involved. But we also have to keep ourselves in check because it's not going to be take a miracle to get back in the playoffs. But if you're looking at this thing from the big picture, yes, the goal is still make the playoffs this season. But realistically, I think we're looking at a larger scope of time here and not necessarily having to have it all happen this season.
Yeah. Oh, totally. And again, it's going to be, like you said, what did he say? It's a process or it's a work in progress. Like, I mean, how many of those goals last night, again, were just like bad defensive mistakes, right? Like, what are you doing, Lucic? What are you doing, Backlund? Like, why is nobody on McDavid? It's just pretty tactical X's and O's things that kind of led to your loss last night. So, yeah, I don't know. I think this game is probably the most interesting. This upcoming one against the Leafs tomorrow is probably the most interesting game thus far because now we get to see Daryl's adjustments for the first time because he hasn't had to do much in terms of, you know, adjusting the roster, adjusting what they're doing tactically through the three wins. Now it's his first chance to really get into it and start doing some things that he thinks will help the team be better. I'm really curious to see what that is. One thing he did say last night that I kind of want your opinion on, he was talking about how, because I see a lot of people who are like, oh, this is just Sutter hockey. He was talking about how the Flames need to play more defensively because they don't have the offensive weapons that the other teams do in the division, like McDavid, Draisaitl, Matthews, Marner. And I know some people are kind of like, mad about that. And it's just like, why don't you just play more offensive? But isn't he right? Like, the Flames don't have anything close to the offensive firepower of those teams. No.
I know this is, he said this probably three or four times now. Even I think when he was doing his interviews before he got here, that's how he was, that was his, you know, some summation of this team in this division. And who's the next closest guy to Connor McDavid on our team? It's gotta be Johnny Gaudreau. And yes. Right? And dude, they're worlds apart. They're not even close to the same player. If you take Johnny Gaudreau at his best compared to Connor McDavid at his best, they're not even close.
No.
Nowhere near. Maybe the gap is smaller between Gaudreau and Draisaitl, but man, like you said, how many times have you said this? Where all you have to do, if you're Dave Tippett, put the two of those guys together, they can single-handedly win you games. So, and Daryl had, you know, in the same vein, has said that when you're playing against guys like Connor McDavid, and Connor McDavid is better than Austin Matthews, even though Austin Matthews and Marner is pretty deadly too, right? But when you're playing against guys like Connor McDavid, one guy is not going to do it. You got to work as a unit. Last night, and this is what blows my mind, is there's no coverage on Connor McDavid last night. That first goal where Lucic does his patented no-look backhand pass up the middle of the ice. If you're going to do no-look backhands, can you at least go backwards? Can you at least chip it towards the boards? Why are you doing no-look backhands, these soft little backhands up the middle of the ice? Why?
That's his patented move, bro. He learned that from like David Krejci or something, probably.
Especially when you've been burnt on it like six times already this season. You're going to do that when you know Connor McDavid's on the ice? Like, what the fuck? But if you break down that entire shift, there's three instances where the Oilers are moving the puck around the horn, and how can you not just keep your eye on McDavid when you're watching the game? Like, I don't do it intentionally. All I know is, like, I know he's the biggest threat in hockey on the planet. When this guy's on the ice, he's the biggest threat in the world. So I can't help but just kind of keep my eye on him at all times, because I know if he gets open and the puck goes to him, there's going to be a scoring chance. I don't get how the coach goes out and says this. The players all say this. You always hear them say this. Oh, yeah, you know where he is at all times. I know where he is at all times. I'm watching the fucking game. I don't know what these players are doing. There's three times before that goal even happened, Connor McDavid is left alone all by himself. I don't get what kind of coverage you're playing here when you know that you have to cover the best guy in hockey. So what happens is, and sure, right, he's good at finding open ice, what the fuck, man? You got Backlund and Mangiapane out there. I get it. Lucic, you know, can't keep up with him. But how is there not a guy on him at all times or even in the vicinity? How do you not anticipate that he's the number one go-to play? They're going to try and funnel the puck through him. I don't get it.
They didn't even have to try.
Like, literally, when he got the puck on that one shift before they scored, he has like 2-3 seconds to do whatever the fuck he wants with the puck. I don't get how that's a recipe for success. That's a game plan. I don't understand it. It made no sense to me.
Yeah, you can literally watch McDavid start on the right wing boards. For some reason, Backlund's nowhere to be found, and Lucic is like in the corner. There's no pressure on him, so he gets all the time in the world to just drift in, take a shot, gets a shot, and then Lucic just, you know, slingshots the pass right back to him, right in the high slot. And again, is anyone near him? I've got a screenshot of it right now. There's three Flames, and in the middle of them with about a 4-foot radius on every side of them is Connor McDavid right in the slot and Ryan Nugent-Hopkins right in the across from him. It's just like, man, that is some piss poor defensive coverage right there.
Like, McDavid's a smart player, but this isn't rocket science. Like, the reason why he can do get all alone up there is he knows, right? If you're the centerman, typically you're playing man on man, 3-on-3 down low with the D-men if you're on the defensive side. So all he has to do is come up to the point there on the half boards by the blue line. And then, you know, the center coverage is gone. You're left with the wingers. But like, man, how is the breakdown so bad against apparently someone you need to know where he is at all times? Like, it would be one thing if you're getting beat one-on-one by McDavid and it's just like, fuck.
You can't. It's just a great play. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just like, and that's going to happen because he's that good. But to actually give him a 5-foot radius with ample time, it's unacceptable.
Yeah. And I mean, that's
completely
unacceptable. Again, like your quote about, you got to know he's out there. Like, what on earth is Lucic thinking? Lucic watches McDavid shoot that and then almost immediately gives them puck right back. What on earth is going through his brain right there? Egregious, you know, egregious and unforgivable giveaway by Lucic right there.
Now, the most fascinating thing for me right now is just to see the impact and what Sutter does throughout the entire season. I'm not just talking about how he responds to this, right? I want to see how he addresses this issue of this team as a whole. I mean, you look at game one was awesome. You come out, you set the tone, you stick to your game plan. Your forecheck was great. You were breaking down the D left, right, and center. You're for the most part defensively sound, right? You were able to generate chances throughout the entirety of the game. You found the back of the net and you're able to get your early lead. Stick with it. When the Oilers tied it up, you bounced back right away and went out ahead again. Like, that was a great execution of a game. Then you come out in game two, and here's where I'm at. Like, we always talk about this. The Oilers are a beatable team, but that doesn't mean you're going to beat them. I just think that coming into game two, your mentality should have been mentally strategic. And what I mean by that is, how do you beat the Oilers again? Because here's where I'm at, right? You watch game one, and yeah, all those things that I just mentioned, you know, give you the win. But then you're like, fuck, man, we went toe-to-toe. Like, that was a nail biter down to the wire. I think, you know, at parts of the game, we outplayed them. At parts of the game, they outplayed us. It's a pretty evenly matched game. I think coming out on top, I mean, we were probably the better team throughout the majority of it, but it was really close. So then you're like, okay, well, how do you follow that up? And sure, you know, the stat answer is you got to, you know, do the exact same things and, you know, replicate the game you just had. But there's more to it, I think. I think there's the game within the game, and we usually talk about this, right? The whole mental aspect of the game. Because what we've seen from this Oilers team is that they can be fragile, right? And look, Dave Tippett's done a good job to really work on that. They're not as fragile as they used to be, but they still have that, right? If you wanted to beat this Oilers team, okay. And like, the stats prove this. They pull us up every single goddamn game. We have to watch a game on Sportsnet. How these guys always respond. How McDavid, oh, look out. McDavid was held off whatever to how many points. He's probably going to have a 5-point game now. Right? You see it every fucking time. And you know exactly how they're going to respond. They just dropped two games and didn't want to lose three in a row. So for me, as a coach or even as a player, I know that the game plan is, look, you got to silence these guys early, because if you come off that win where you beat them, you go to the thing is, when you go to toe to toe with the team and you beat them, they got beat, right? If you keep getting beat and beat and beat, it starts to wear on you mentally. So you have to win that first period, and you have to win the first 10 minutes of the first period. We saw the opposite happen, but I don't get how. Okay, if it was me, I would have had a shadow on both McDavid and Draisaitl, because I would have known that if you can shut those guys down and quiet them a little bit in that first period, that's your best shot at winning two times in a row against them. And maybe it's different because it's not a playoff series, right? It's a regular season game, so you don't really go to that well. But are we not really in a playoff, you know, format here because we're battling for our playoff lives?
If you won last night, you would have been 3 points back of the Oilers with games in hand.
And you would have had a mental ground on them.
Yeah.
Now it's the opposite. Like, these guys, if they start feeling good about themselves, that's when they're unbelievable. And the opposite is true too. So, man, I just wish that even if you're not going to put a shadow on McDavid and Draisaitl, can you at least make sure there's coverage? Like, where was it? So you did the opposite. You gave them all the time and space in the world to do whatever the fuck they wanted. They capitalized. They get that one goal, and then Richie takes a stupid-ass penalty. You're down two goals in a matter of 7 minutes. The game, in hindsight, pretty much over right there. That's it. That's all it took. So you have Bradtree Living going out and getting guys like Lucic and Richie to quote-unquote make this team harder to play against, yet those two guys cost you the game in a matter of 7 minutes.
Yeah, but they fight and stuff, though.
So, well, look, they were effective in game one, right? But they weren't in game two. So, I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. I just think that, you know, this whole Sun Tzu thing, Art of War, this is a game within the game. The psychological aspect of the game is really real. And you needed to work on psychologically beating the Oilers last game. You that, in my opinion. And you totally failed to do it.
Yeah, 100%. You could have buried this. You could have buried them, and you did the exact opposite.
And so much is hanging in the balance. Like, how many more games do you have against these guys? If you see them in the playoffs now, do you think they're scared to play us?
Oh, no way.
Like, to me, that was a tipping point in your whole entire season. And I don't know. I just don't like the game plan going into it. I feel like you should have put a blanket on those guys in the first period. Been like, if it was me coaching, and I'm not a coach, but if it was just me, I would have been like, I don't give a fuck about scoring goals. I would have told the third and fourth line, I said, you guys got to get us one or two goals in the first half of the game. That's your job. The top two lines, they're not even going to try and get goals. They're just focused on blanketing these guys. Like I would have probably rolled out a trap just so that you could stifle those guys, because they're at a moment of opportune potential weakness where you can psychologically fuck with them.
It would have been a perfect – last night would have been a perfect opportunity to, under Daryl Sutter, to finally say to Connor McDavid, it's not going to be easy to score goals and rack up the points against the Flames anymore. If you're going to want to do it, you're going to have to, you know, go to the really tough areas, get dirty a bit. And they didn't do that. They did the exact opposite. They made it incredibly easy for them. In fact, like, McDavid has the third most points by an Oiler versus the Flames to the first six games of any season. He has 14 points against us. The only player to have more through six games was Wayne Gretzky in 85-86 with 18, and Wayne Gretzky in 84-85 with 18. So, yeah, probably a good idea to, you know, maybe start making life a little bit more hard for McDavid. Like, holy shit.
Yeah, I mean, especially read the game within the game, right? They got in game one, they got uncharacteristic secondary scoring. That's what kept them in the game. You did a pretty solid job on McDavid and Draisaitl in game one.
Yeah.
So you knew they're going to come out hungry. If you could have stifled them, you could have frustrated them. But, like, not only did you not do that, like you just said, you didn't even cover them at all.
You gave them so much time and space. It was ridiculous. And
honestly, And I guess I'm just looking at the bigger picture, right? If you're going to play these guys in the playoffs, because if you want to beat the Oilers, I look at, like, okay, if you want to beat them, like, you got to pitch your playoff series, right? How would you actually beat the Oilers in a seven-game playoff series? The only way you can beat them is you got to take away their will. And it starts with the two of those guys. You take away their will, because how they go, the team goes. You've seen it 100 times. And the only way you can take away their will is by, you got to mentally, like you just said, the Sutter hockey, You got to make it so fucking hard for them that once the results aren't coming, they start getting frustrated and frustrated, and just hope that in a 7-game series, you can do that long enough that they can't beat you. Like, I don't see how there's any other way you're beating the Oilers.
Yeah. Again, you're not beating them 8-7, but you could beat them 4-3. Just, you know, don't give McDavid every opportunity to destroy you, and Draisaitl every opportunity to destroy you. Just limit them a bit, like you did the last game. You're not going to outscore them. You can't outscore them. Doesn't mean you have to shut them out, but geez, just play basic defense, guys.
Yeah. So I know. I was thinking about that too. That point you brought up, right? Like, Daryl has gone out and said now that we don't have the firepower to stick with these types of teams. Yeah, I don't know how I feel about it. I guess there's part of me that's kind of like doesn't like hearing that.
Yeah.
But there's also the part of me that's going to trust that Daryl knows what he's talking about, right? Because if you look at 18-19, that was the MO. We just outscored teams. Yeah. So.
Well, and I don't even, like, again, I'm still at wait and see mode and stuff like that. But, like, I think the most glaring and obvious example of, like, okay, maybe that whole strategy needs to be altered a bit is, like, Gaudreau last night. Like, he can't play with those guys and be expected to play, like, strictly dump and chase if you're going to start scoring goals, because somebody's going to have to score eventually. You can't just have Lindholm scoring like one goal here and there and that's it. You need to get Johnny Gaudreau going. You still need to score more than one or two goals a night. And I mean, somebody had the Flames successful dumps last night with Gaudreau on the ice. They went 2-for-15 in terms of gaining possession after a dump in with Johnny Gaudreau on the ice. Yeah. You can't be throwing 23-13 and then a fourth liner out there and having them play this way. Like, you're still going to need to score goals.
Yeah. Again, I think Mike Smith, he was excellent at every single time we dumped it in. It seemed like, you know, 80% of the time he would just break the puck out by himself. It's pretty ridiculous. But if you're looking at Johnny Gaudreau, this guy needs, look, if he's not going to be allowed to generate chances off the rush anymore, and I'm not sure, you know, if that's going to be the case or not, it looks that way, but then he needs play driving line mates. I mean, you were texting me this morning. I was like, why can't Monahan play the wing? If he sucks at defense, he can't win a fucking faceoff. Why is he playing center anyways?
Yeah, like, how many times were we texting over the last, well, you've been saying this, Trevor, is like, can he win a goddamn draw on the power play?
He must be 1 for 100.
Like, I'm serious. Like, every time the Flames have a power play, it's guaranteed the pucks get iced on the first shift because Monahan can't win the draw. Why is he taking those draws? God. But yeah, like, you tried Backlund on the wing last year for some reason. Like, Monahan does what he does well, which is score goals, but he's not a good puck retriever. He doesn't drive play in the least. So, like, what is Johnny Gaudreau supposed to do when he's dumping the puck in?
Yeah. And this might be a new problem for Daryl to figure out. Like, has he ever had an extremely skilled featherweight before?
Don't think so. Like, what's the closest comparable? As your team's best player, probably not. Like, because you look at his Kopitar, Jeff Carter, Dustin Brown, the Flames had a Ginla. I mean, he's had skilled players, but as your number one offensive producer, a guy whose game solely relies at, you know, generating offense via his playmaking and usually via his transition game, it's a new challenge for him for sure, I think.
Yeah. And this is where I just go back to the bigger picture, longer term looking. I don't think Daryl Sutter is going to stick with what doesn't work.
Yeah.
I don't think he's the square peg round hole guy like we've seen with Warden Gullison. That's why that was so infuriating. So what you're seeing now, right, there's an adjustment process. I think he's smart enough that if it's not working, he won't continue to force them to do it.
And I think it's a little more than, because if you're just looking at it at a basic level, it's more complex than just like Johnny Gaudreau is only going to dump the puck in and he can only dump the puck in, right? I watched Gaudreau dump the puck in religiously last night. Like, for anyone who thinks Johnny Gaudreau is uncoachable, watch the last four games and just watch that guy dump that puck in religiously. Like, he will follow what the coach tells him to do to a T. I never want to hear about how uncoachable Gaudreau is. Like, holy shit. Guy's too coachable. Guy does it too much. But anyways, like, I think it's less like Sutter's going to force him to play this way and it's never going to work. Because, like, in the first few games, he was still generating enough once they got the puck. I just think it's putting him in a position to be successful. If they are going to play a certain way, he needs to be with different line mates, as far as I'm concerned. Because, like, again, what is Monahan's pretty much useless unless he's getting a feed in the slot. I'm sorry, Brett Ritchie's a fringe NHLer. So if you're going to be playing this way, and honestly, like, I do think the season weighs in the balance with how Gaudreau can produce offense, because that's going to be the difference maker on most nights over the long term. Is can the Flame, like, again, Daryl said, they're not going to outscore teams. You still need to score. You still need to score. I'm sorry. You still need to score goals. So I don't know. If you're going to play this way, Johnny needs some assistance, but man, it's, I don't know. I'm really curious. Like you said, I trust Daryl's smart enough to not do the Ward thing, which is continue to try things that don't work. But I don't know. I'm curious to see how it plays out and how he adjusts it.
Johnny, you know, he feeds off the rush, right? And that's because he's so skilled, right? And he can create something out of nothing. So if he's going to be forced to play the dump and jump and chase and generate all of his offense from down low, then he needs to be playing with guys, because that's not how he drives play. He drives play freewheeling open ice. So if he is being forced to drive play, mucking it down low, like, the guy is 5'9", 165. And that's just genetics. And he's probably even smaller than that, because that's what it says on the whatever sheet. And those are always beefed up a bit.
Mm-hmm.
He's probably not 5'9". He's probably not 165. But he can't get bigger. He's fucking tiny. So if he's going to be asked to, like, look at the defensemen he plays against. They're all fucking massive. He's playing against guys that are, like, literally half a foot taller than him and probably anywhere between 40 to 60 pounds heavier. Good fucking luck. I mean, he's skilled, but he's not that skilled. So if he's going to be asked to generate chances from down low off the cycle, you know, then he needs better line mates, because he's had to carry around line mates his whole career. Right. And Sean Monahan, look, he's an elite finisher. We spent a lot of time on it. But, like, you're going to stick him with Sean Monahan and Brett Ritchie. Like, Monahan is a similar player to Gaudreau. He's just not, look, he beefed up, but he's not dominant. You know, one-on-one, he's not dominant down low. He's an elite finisher. He knows how to find the open space and put the puck away. So either these guys need, you know, a different game plan, or maybe it's time to split them up. Does Daryl have the big enough balls to be the one to finally split these guys up? They need someone. Look, Brett Ritchie's effective in terms of size, and you know, that was even Sutter's strategy, is like those Monty and Johnny need a bigger and faster player to, you know, to play with, but they need someone that can drive play. Like, they need that, and someone that also drives play. Someone like, obviously, Ryan O'Reilly is an extreme version. We don't need someone that good.
I mean, you've got the perfect guy in Lindholm, but whatever.
Right? Like, why? Imagine if you moved. Here's the thing. It's just like your centerman needs to, A, be good at faceoffs. Sean Monahan sucks at faceoffs. B needs to be able to win one-on-one battles down low, not really Sean Monahan's biggest strength. Like, maybe you should try moving him to the wing. Imagine Lindholm in the middle of, you know, Johnny and Monty, or you even split them up. What about even like Mangiapane for even a small guy? He drives play, right? And he can actually, you know, win those puck battles down low. What if you put Johnny with even Backlund and Mangiapane?
Dude, at this point, anything with Johnny, because that's the thing with him. Like you were saying, he can't be expected to carry the load in the zone if that's how they're going to play. Like, he just can't, right? Like, he's a guy, he can get pucks to other guys in really tight spots, but geez, you can't expect him to be going and getting dump-ins or like cycling. Like, come on. So he needs somebody who can do that for him in the offensive zone. But he also needs a guy who can help him get out of his own zone when he gets stuck. He's not like terrible in his own zone, but he, you know, again, his physical capabilities limit him a bit. So that's why I think a guy like Lindholm is so good there. But I mean, seriously, if you just put him with Tkachuk and Lindholm, swap him and Dubé, is that not already improved? Like, I just think the time has come for a serious discussion. You either go back to the Lindholm, Monahan, Gaudreau line and the 3M line, or you finally split Gaudreau and Monahan up. Those are the options at this point, I think.
Yeah, and I mean, if you're gonna stick with this dump and chase and just feed, you know, fuel your offense off the forecheck, which we've seen work in 3 games out of 4. I mean, I don't know. I think honestly, maybe Mike Smith was the difference last game. Plus, the team has looked kind of flat as a whole.
Yeah, I mean, but how many chances did they bury into Smith's pads last night too? Like pretty much every single one.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, just a final point on the Johnny Gaudreau. It's just like you have what you have. Like, you can't ask more than what your genetics can give you.
Yeah,
like people might be like, "Oh, Theo Fleury was a beast." I'm looking at Theo Fleury's number. It says he was 5'6". If Johnny's 5'9", there's no way Theo's 5'6". Right? But Theo had, you know, 15, 20 pounds on Johnny. Plus, he was a bit of a psycho. So, you know, there's not really comparable in the size differential. But point is like, if you're going to stick with feeding off the forecheck, give him some players. I think Mangiapane would be excellent.
Mangiapane would be excellent with Gaudreau because that's the other thing too with these lines right now. I'm sorry, you can't have two of your top six. Like, they're so thin up front already. I've been saying this forever. You can't have Backlund and Mangiapane, whether or not it's the third line or not. They need to be up in the rotation.
Yep.
Because again, like, Dylan Dubé has been good, but he's still not a legitimate every night playing against top competition. You're going to get more from Mangiapane in the top six as your Backlund, and Brett Ritchie does not belong probably even in the top 12, let alone in the top six. So you're thin up there already. You can't keep forcing, or like, you can't have guys like Ritchie and Dubé playing similar and a lot of nights more minutes than Andrew Mangiapane if you're going to be an effective, like, again, the top six is so thin. So I just think bumping Mangiapane up is another simple fix. So we'll see what Daryl does. I'm really intrigued. I'm surprised he hasn't pulled out the line blender yet.
Well, I know one of his strategies for this team and the takeover was to try and keep as much the same as possible.
Yeah.
While addressing the most blaring obvious issues. Needs.
Yeah.
So, but at what point now does that become the blaring issue? So, yeah, I agree. It's going to be interesting to watch how it unfolds. I mean, you know, the whole point with the whole Backlund Mangiapane thing, like, how good were those guys in game one? Were they not your top performers?
Oh yeah. They were great. I thought Lindholm was really probably the best player on the ice in both games, honestly, but the Backlund was really good in that first game.
And then last night it was literally a case where Milan Lucic really dragged those guys down last night.
Yeah, and I know Daryl didn't like Mangiapane's penalty in the third period. And, I mean, really bad giveaway by Backlund. But, yeah, I'm not trying to shit on Lucic, but I mean, like, this is something Ward never could figure out, is when it's time to, you know, diminishing returns, right?
Yeah.
You can get diminishing returns from Lucic on that line. And I understand.
Same with Richie on the.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Yep. And I understand that Lucic is a decent player in his own zone, minus the blaring right up the ice, up the gut giveaways half the time. Yeah.
Usually at this pace, what is it, one every four games? Like, he's good for it.
But I mean, come on, you're not getting, like, even if you put Dubé there and put like Gaudreau on the top line, you're telling me you wouldn't, that line wouldn't be better and more effective with a guy who can skate? So I don't know. The Lucic with, and I don't even, like, I know Backlund and Lucic have a bit of chemistry, but I like their games, and especially with Mangiapane there as well, like, I don't know, their games just don't seem to click as much as people seem to think, in my opinion. It's just, I don't know what Lucic really brings to that line, other than that he can, once the cycle gets going, he's a big body and can keep a cycle going. But outside of that, I don't really know what he's bringing to that third line. But it's for me, it's less about Lucic and more about those two guys need to be more utilized more properly.
Yep. And, it, you know, it is. It's the ongoing dance, right? So as long as Daryl is adjusting as he goes, I'm not sure. I mean, we're recording this before practice today. I'm really curious to see. I hope there's at least one adjustment. I hope he at least changes one thing. And if he doesn't, then they sure as shit better be better 5-on-5 game one against Toronto. He better be addressing that as a whole.
Well, yeah.
But you know, I'm at a place now where I still trust. I still trust that Sutter is a good enough coach that he's going to make the right adjustments, even if we're not seeing them on the surface.
Well, yeah. And again, like, the last thing, we're all freaking out today about the lines and stuff again. But I mean, again, if the Flames, similar to a recurring theme this year, if you clean up even two or three of those terrible defensive breakdowns, the giveaways, the lack of coverage on McDavid, and then Markstrom makes a save and you get a power play goal, this game, you maybe even win this game, right? So it's the same old story. The same mistake sunk the Flames last night, in that there was some really bad defensive lapses and your power play sucked.
Yeah, let's get into power play and let's get into Markstrom, because this power play, like, what is going on? At what point? I mean, sure, there's been an adjustment. He's got Hanifin there instead of the Rass is at. Oh man, he's been ass, dude.
He has been the biggest disappointment of the season by a mile for me.
As of right now, in that current roster that's being dressed on a nightly basis, he is the weakest link.
Easily. Yep. 100%.
And he's another prime example of looking at, you got to be aware of where McDavid is at all times. What is he doing when he knows McDavid is the guy covering him, and he's just kind of like dipsy doodles with it on the blue line there? I don't know how he didn't get a penalty.
I know. And everybody was like, what a play by Anderson to take down McDavid without getting a penalty. I was like, did you see the 2 seconds previous where he like blatantly gave him the puck away like an idiot? Terrible.
It's almost like on a shift by shift now. It's just like, when is this guy going to get his feet moving? He's way too slow.
Yeah.
Way too slow for this game right now. And his skating got worse. And I don't know if that's just, you know, from adjusting over time slowly, the frog and the boiling water thing under Ward's system, but man, it's bad. And maybe that's part of the problem with Gio too. It's like, and because of Gio's age, he just can't get that gear back.
Rasmus needs to spend the summer on Daryl's farm, just like doing chores. Just doing, like, what's a chore that gets your foot speed out? Just like throwing bales and just getting into a ridiculous shape. And
you just got to work on foot speed, man. It's plyometrics, the crossovers, like, in those little ladders and shit. You know, short sprints from A to B. Like, this guy is, his foot speed is really bad.
Yeah. And I mean, the biggest thing that I can't get over with the power play is, it's going on like, what, a year and a half now, where, okay, personnel, everything, all you want, but like, I cannot believe that there is no, like, there's no adjustments of the actual formation and there's no different looks on the attack. Like, they literally have nothing. They just shoot it from the point or the right circle and hope for a tip. And that's it.
It's pathetic. There's no, like, look at the best power plays historically, even in the league, right? A lot of them rely on the cross ice one timer to a deadly shot, like Ovechkin, Laine, Ilya Draisaitl. Like these one timer cross ice passes score you a lot of power play goals. And I guess who on our team has a good one timer shot? Probably Lindholm. Maybe other guys do, but they don't ever try it, so we don't know. But if you look at the heat maps, I mean, you posted this after the game. If you look at the heat maps of the Toronto and the Oilers on their power play, in front of the net, the amount of chances they're getting in the slot is what you would expect when you're on the power play, when you're on the man advantage. You look at the Flames heat map, it's ice cold in the slot. Just so happens that's where your deadliest shooter is standing with guys covering them all the time. I don't get how Sean Monahan, you know, 80% of the time stationary in the slot is an effective utilization of probably your best shot.
Well, and the other thing is too, like, they
can all, can he not one time the puck? Sorry to cut you off, but
no,
he doesn't have a one timer option. I like, why don't we even see it tried?
Well, how many times did we used to see when Gaudreau is on his off wing, which drives me crazy that they never try. He would fire a shot, a pass cross ice to Monahan, who's on his strong side, and Monahan would one time a strong side one timer into the net. That is a hard shot. That's a shot not many guys can get off. That's a shot Sean Monahan can get off. That's a luxury on your power play. That is something that you can create that's dangerous. Like, you know, the one I'm talking about, Gaudreau's on the right wing boards, fires a cross ice pass to Monahan on his strong side, and he buries it short side usually. We haven't seen any of that. Gaudreau's always on his strong wing. Lindholm's always on his strong wing. Monahan is just literally standing there vacantly with nothing to do. The only time he ever even gets the puck is when they try that stupid goal line pass to him that everyone sees coming, that doesn't get the goaltender moving, that very rarely works, that it really only works if there's a cross seam pass prior. And that's what I'm failing to understand, because, like, the basic tenet of a power play being effective is cross ice and cross seam passes.
Yes.
Have you seen one this year? Even I've seen two, and they both resulted in goals.
You don't even have guys set up in their one time off wings. What? Who's running this thing? Is it?
Or it's Edwards? Ray Edwards is the power play guy. Huska?
Man, I don't understand how. If like, why aren't you studying the crap out of the Oilers and Toronto Maple Leafs power play, and then trying to emulate it in your own unique way that's going to suit your players? Why are you, want to talk about sticking with something that's not working? This power play is a fucking embarrassment from the breakout onwards.
It's 27th right now in terms of expected goals for per 60, so creating dangerous scoring chances. 27th.
How is your go-to these shots from the point?
Blast it and hope for a tip.
And we're not, and like, listen, if you have Shea Weber or Al MacInnis, or, you know, guys like Brett Burns, Erik Karlsson, who actually have deadly shots, or Karlsson can make deadly plays from up there, you just got like, oh, went right into his chest again. Damn. Next time.
Well, they're so reliant on this tip thing. I
missed the net.
Geo just winds up, I'm blasting it, blasts it into, like, row six.
Like, there's that one shift 5-on-5. I think it was the second period or second or third, when you're actually, you know, hemming the Oilers in.
It was that, I know exactly shift, was what, like, you're talking about.
Like 2 or 3 minutes, but most of it is just like Geo and Rask passing it back and forth, firing into shin pads. Yeah, it's like, yeah, you had all sustained, the momentum. You had sustained pressure, but you didn't really generate a lot of scoring chances.
So I just don't understand the power play. Like, I can't. It's
terrible.
It's so bad. And that's what blows my mind, is like, nothing is being changed about the power play. Like, what the hell? Again, if you score on the power play last night, that game's a lot closer. Like, just once. If you score, like, I guess Gaudreau got his garbage time goal. But, I mean, if you score on one of the previous ones, game, totally different game.
Totally. You got Chucky. I don't understand why this guy has to – look at his windups. They're, like, 3 seconds long.
Wait, I thought he perfected this move, though.
No, that you're talking about the between the legs.
Yeah. It's perfected.
All right, so if you're listening to the broadcast, Kelly Rudy, apparently Chucky's perfected it. I love this move. He's perfected it. One of the guys – Have you scored on it this year? Have we seen it like?
What's his percentage? Now? Like 0.4? The thing is, the times he scored with his dumb between the legs thing has been on the other side of the net. It's been on his left wing. Think about it. Think about the San Jose goal. It's when he's threatening to shoot and it goes between his legs. I've never seen him score on that. Well, maybe he gets once like 4 years ago against the Islanders. I hate that play so much. I want Daryl Sutter to tell Matthew Tkachuk, if you ever do that again, you're not playing for the rest of the night. I am so sick of that shit.
I mean, by comparison, the actual play you're supposed to do, they did it 5-on-5, where Tkachuk finds Lindholm cross crease.
Exactly.
Where's that play on the power play? Because when I go back in my, you know, the recesses of my memory and think of the most deadliest power plays I've watched, they're always cross crease passes. And then Chucky with his windup, man. Like when he's on, you know, the face-off dot or coming off the half boards, like he takes forever to release the puck. It's ridiculous.
Fix the power play. I don't know how this is top priority. Fix it.
Yep. Oh boy. Oh boy. So yeah, Daryl's got to do something about that. I don't care if it's not his role. He's the head honcho. He's got to tell Huska to pull his head out of his ass, or Edwards, whoever the hell it is. That's ridiculous.
First signs of Markstrom. Well, not first signs. He hasn't been super great in the last little while here, but he let in some shaky ones last night.
Look, before coming into the week, we were both in agreement that you probably need to split the games with Edmonton and then split the games with Toronto. And it's easy to say in hindsight, yeah, Rittich should have started because Markstrom led in 7 goals. But he obviously hasn't gotten his game back.
Yeah, I don't know if he's tired or if he's – I don't know. This is – hopefully he has a huge bounce back in the next start because –
Well, the thing is like,
that's why you pay $6 million for a goalie, is because he makes a big save when you need it. And he did not do that at all last night. Like, again, the Flames were giving the puck away left, right, and center. But if he makes a save on that Cahoon, like that Cahoon shot was insane. I won't blame him for that one. But if he makes the 4-1 save or something, makes one of those saves when the game is still within reach, he maybe could have reeled it in or at least pressed a little bit. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. And I think, you know, the concerning thing about it is the longer this goes on, the longer it's going to take for him to get his game back.
Yeah.
Like, and when we say get his game back, I mean, you know what we're talking about. You saw it in the first 15 games of the season, how unbelievable this guy was. So, but I don't know. I think that he was overplayed. Then he got injured. And now he's behind the eight ball trying to get back. I think he will. You know, after the game, Sutter said he doesn't like pulling goaltenders. I want to get your thoughts on that. I like what you had to say about it.
I like that he has a philosophy on it. I am not really, I don't know. It sounds like he knows. I like that he said they need to be out there with their teammates.
And yeah, battle back.
Yeah, I mean, like that. Obviously
the opposite we saw with Ward in the Dallas series, but.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I think something that has been lacking with coaches and for these guys has been like clear guidelines and expectations, right? Like, again, I'll always go back to Sam Bennett saying, I don't know why I'm scratched. I don't know if they're playing mind games. Like if you're Markstrom and you're a net, you know, now, right? Like it's clear you're not getting pulled, right?
Yeah.
Whether or not that's ultimately the best move, I don't know, but at least from like a player personnel a psychological perspective, you know what's expected of you. You know what's going on. There's not going to be any weird nonsense going on. So in terms of clear expectations, I do like that. I don't know. He probably could have used the rest, though.
Yep.
That's all I'm saying.
And Daryl said he did say that's worked for him in the past. So,
yeah, can't argue with that.
Yeah. But I mean, yeah, the power play comparison, I mean, Edmonton goes 3 out of 4, 75%. We go 1 for 3, 25%. I like how Kelly Rudy's like, I think it was the, I don't know if it was the first or the second power play.
Dude,
like,
I had to listen to it on mute for the last 5 minutes.
Yeah, I started muting them.
Yeah.
I mean, Rick and Kelly are a fun time when we're winning. But when we're getting our asses kicked and they're just chuckling it up and having a good time, like, it gets infuriating.
Yeah.
But I like how Kelly's like, oh, here, the Flames have a chance to go on the power play and build some momentum here. I'm just like, oh, yeah, I'm fucking right. Sure.
It's the exact opposite. I mean, it even happened in the last game where it's like, it just sucks all the momentum because they can't generate anything. It's pathetic.
Yeah. I don't know. Game two, man, like right off the hop, you're out skated, outworked, out hustled. You lost every battle. I didn't see them get to one loose puck before the Oilers did. So it did look shades of what we've seen in the past. I just hope Daryl can work this out of them over time, because it's awful to watch.
Yeah, I'm curious to see post practice if Daryl has anything to say. He did not like those penalties at all. He made it very clear who and what he didn't like. So I am curious. This is the most interesting game coming up, because the first time Daryl Sutter has an excuse to make some changes, and we'll see what those changes are.
The other thing that I thought, I listened to his presser last night, because somebody did ask him, right, to compare this team to the 04 team.
Yeah.
And, you know, he kind of sloughed it off a bit, but he did say, he did the air quotes when he said it, like, this team is more skilled than the 04 team. But he said that the 04 team was more mature, and that they understood what they needed to do to see success and win. And I think that obviously that was because of Daryl, because they sucked before Daryl. So I think it's a matter of Daryl knows what it takes to win, and he's going to have to instill it over time. Look, it's only been a week. You knew that Daryl wasn't going to win. We weren't going to go 30-0 under Daryl.
Oh, we all thought it was going to happen. You know, we all thought it was.
Yeah, you knew you were going to lose some games. So he's got some work to do. Because if you look at game one, you saw some really great things, even going back to the Montreal. So we've seen some really great things, right? And I feel like those things that we've seen that were great were a direct correlation to Daryl Sutter being there. More so what I think we saw last night was the direct correlation of the previous coaches we've seen being there. So he's got work to do, right? But that game one was awesome. I mean, Richie drops Jujhar Khaara. That was unbelievable. You had Lindholm stripping McDavid of the puck to set up Dubé for a goal. Shillington's flying down the ice and lobbing, you know, beautiful cross crease passes to the wide open guy. You catch Mike Smith roaming out of the net, right?
That was a perfect game.
And when you lose your lead, you snap back quickly with a beauty snipe from Anafin. Yeah, I mean, we've seen some good stuff in a really short time period. So I'm still in a good headspace.
Well, yeah, you're 3-1. Like, again, that the 7 spot leaves a bad taste in your mouth last night. But like again, do we just completely forget about the first game when the Flames did a lot of really good things? So if you get working on the power play, try to get Johnny Gaudreau in a better spot, and I think you'll be good to go. So the thing that I'm most happy with is that some of the things that won you the first game against the Oilers, you saw present in the second game. Like, they pushed back in the second period for sure. Like, I think that was the best thing to come out of this 4-game segment, I think, was the fact that the Oilers were able to tie the game and they didn't fall apart. They actually came back and pressed and won that first game. Like, because how many times? Oh, 3-2, 3-3, and then you lose that game. Like, that's what happened when the Flames lost to the Oilers the last time when they lost 3-2, the Flames were up and then they just sat back and let the Oilers get back and just pretty much handed them the victory. The opposite happened in that game. They pressed, they came back, they fought back. That first game was awesome. And I can't believe Kara's not getting a call for that hit on Shillington, because that was brutal.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at it enough times, I think the only reason why is because he definitely did slow up and let up, even though it was still direct contact to the head. But
how is that not a textbook headshot, though? Like, Shillington is engaged with another player. Kara takes about 20 strides and nails him right in the head. Like, ugh.
I think if Shillington was injured on the play, it's a different result there.
It's dumb.
So I totally agree. Look, and this is why it's so intriguing to see, because you know there's going to be some speed bumps, some hiccups. But like we mentioned, I think right now it's just a matter of, okay, now I'm curious to see is there any adjustments? And if we don't see any adjustments on the surface, then we got to look for the adjustments underneath. But these two games against Toronto is going to tell us a lot. The other thing is, at what point does Brad address the needs of the team and get another top right winger up there? Because Johnny needs somebody to play with. I mean, you were saying Domi would be a perfect fit. Josh Anderson would have been a perfect fit. Like, if you can't go out and spend the money because you already spent it, right, with guys like Tanev, Markstrom, and Lucic, then you got to get creative and find somebody that's going to work out in a situation like, you know, that you can afford.
Yeah, like, still, again, the glaring need still is there of another top six forward. Like, it's still so glaring, it's almost ridiculous. Like, again, you can maybe try to stopgap that, fill it with a younger guy. Maybe you call up a guy like Matthew Phillips or something. But, dude, they still need another top six guy. And like you said, they specifically to play with Gaudreau, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it's just getting ridiculous at this point. And the only reason I said Domi is because, I mean, it's not really working out well for him in Columbus. His cap hit would be reasonable at 5.3. Like,
you manageable.
You could probably find that money somewhere. So that was the only reason I brought up Domi. And I think Domi would be such a good, he's a similar player to Gaudreau in that dude can fly through the neutral zone. Dude is a really offensively minded playmaker. So I think he and Gaudreau could, and then move Monahan to the wing. Boom. Problem solved. Domi, Gaudreau, Monahan.
What do you think of Eric Staal? He's only making 3.25, I think. I mean, he's definitely, how old is he now?
He's old. He's like, what, 35 now? 35. I don't know.
I'd take him over Richie.
36. I'd take him over Richie. But I mean, if they're going to go out and get somebody,
are they?
Yeah, I know. That's what I'm saying.
If you're not going to go out and get somebody, like, why didn't they get Perry?
If they're going to go get somebody legit for once. Like, stop trying to just like plug a hole. Or just like kind of stop gap it or band-aid it. Just go get the guy you want already. If it means you have to trade Monahan or something, I'm sick of this. It's like kind of with the coaching thing, right? It's like, enough's enough. Go get the guy who's going to get the job done, and or else don't talk about it. I don't want to hear again how he was in on something and it fell through. Like, either do it or forget, or either call Matt Phillips up and play Matt Phillips there all year, or put Tkachuk with Gaudreau, or do something, or go get a top six forward. Just do it already. You need to do it.
Yeah. I mean, it was being reported that Brad was looking for a right winger before the coaching change. It's died off now. And this, I don't know, maybe it just looks this way, but this is like, this is not, you know, Brad for living to a T. Just like, oh, I did one thing. Now I can sit back and not do another thing. So just like, you still have the same needs. Regardless of, you know, you finally address the coaching, you still have that top six hole up there.
Yeah.
So get it done. The last thing I want to touch on, we got to give Noah Hanifin some love. We've shit on him a lot in the past.
Well, to be fair, we mostly shit on him in the context of him playing with Travis Hamonic as a pairing.
Yeah, I've singled him out as an individual quite a bit.
Who haven't we singled out though?
But he's been really good this season, and that pairing with him and Tanev. And I mean, you spent time on this last podcast of, you know, saying that you weren't thrilled with the Tanev sighting, but he's turning out to be great this season. We'll see how it matures in the next few years, but they've been excellent.
They've been great. And like, if Hanifu could just learn to shoot, that would be great, because
hey, we saw a nice shot last game.
Had a great shot. I was really worried he was going to bury that right into Mike Smith's crest, because that's what he's known for. He's not particularly known for his finishing. If he could get his offensive game rolling again, like he did last year, because that's what's been the most surprising thing to me, is that he's turned into, he's having such a good defensive impact, because the knock on him last year, and especially with Hamonic, was like, dude cannot play in his own end. And
yeah, that was bad last year.
So what's funny is, like, how much were we praising Rasmus Anderson last year for solidifying Noah Hanifin, when maybe the opposite was true?
Yeah.
Because one guy looks really good, one guy looks like ass. So they've been an excellent pairing. It's too bad Gio and Anderson are struggling so bad, because the emergence of Tanev as an elite shutdown defenseman, along with Hannafin's progression, has been the most encouraging thing of the season. While the regression of Giordano and the just straight up terrible play of Anderson and Gio has been probably the most depressing part of the season. So, man, if Chris Tanev though, like, he's returned to form, like, no doubt he's been great. Like, Hannafin's been great, but I mean, I am blown away with how good a defenseman Chris Tanev is.
He's been your best defenseman.
Easily. It's not even close.
Yeah. No, he's been a fresher breath of air back there, really.
Yeah.
All right. So watch for some adjustments. We'll see if there's any. If there's not any on the surface, you got to look a little deeper. But this two games coming up against the Maple Leafs, you have to get one. If you can get 3 out of 4 points, I'm thrilled. But you have to win at least one of these games.